All right. Thank you, Eric Van Sais. That question came from Michelle via email, news@kcaw.org. This is a live call-in show with school board candidates Amy Morrison, Eric Van Sais, and Cass Pook. However, our phones aren't quite working, so I'm directing everybody who would like to call to just send me an email, news@kcaw.org, and we'll get your question on the air that way. You can also go to Raven Radio's Facebook page and just post a comment on our on the forum thread. It's pinned to the top of the page, and we'd really enjoy hearing from you tonight. So I wanted to play a little bit of tape from last night's school board meeting. I think, Amy, you were there as in the audience as a member of the public, and Eric was there as a seated member of the board. Cass, you were out of town, but I'm sure this it will be familiar to you. At the school board meeting last night, former math teacher and high school principal Lyle Sparagrove referred to the high school math program as 20 years of students struggling and one of Sitka High's weaknesses. Student leadership, he said, remains frustrated by the lack of progress. Back in June, the school board adopted this hybrid approach to math that would combine the newer integrated math with some of the traditional math. And Lyle, I think, was giving that approach a bit of a mixed review. He was he helped sort of design the new approach to math in the middle school anyway. But anyway, I thought we'd just play a little bit of Lyle's comments to the school board last night, and maybe I could get your reaction to it. Here we go.
And in 2012, a major change in June occurred when the state school board adopted new state standards. Grade 8 is now linear algebra. Grade 7 is now 8th grade math. Things dropped down. Things got more challenging. It's a shift for mathematics in the state and in the nation. I do not believe there is one ideal math program, but whatever program is used, it should meet the college and career needs of Sitka High students, have support for the parents, and support of the district administration. Again, I appreciate your concerns and frustrations with the math program at Sitka High, having been a part of it since 94, and hope that we can remove some of the emotions, some of the anecdotal stuff, and look at data. I'm a data person, and an education decision should be made on data. If possible, show me the data that supports the change, because I get a sense change is what some of you would like, and that's okay. Show me the data, and I'll get on the same bandwagon you're on to help support in whatever way, and I'm sure the staff and the administration will too.
All right, that was former Sitka High principal and longtime math teacher Lyle Sparagrove speaking to the board last night during Persons to be Heard. Cass, you're up with this question. Matt, I think Lyle is right. Math has been an emotional issue for people recently. Where do you is the district heading in the right direction with math, especially with the change back in June to a sort of adopt the hybrid approach in the high school?
I've never liked the math. And there was a question on here. About what would you change if there's a decision? I can't remember who.
Oh, yeah, Susie asked. It's an email question. What do you see as the one decision that you wish the school board had not made?
Yeah, and what would he or she think would be appropriate to remedy the situation? I remember when I first came on the board, we were doing the integrated math, and the previous board had just adopted it, which they called core math. And if there was one decision that could be changed, I would probably go back and, if I was part of that board, change that decision, because I don't think it's been good for our district. There have been a high number of students that have homeschooled, and I know that they just introduced the hybrid and how it was going to work with traditional math. I'm still leery about it. I wish that we can just do traditional math, just have algebra and geometry and the traditional ladder. There are pros and cons to both. And But after 20 years, I think it's time for a change. And so.
All right. Thank you, Cass Puck. Eric, your thoughts on the math and your, you know, during Persons to be Heard, you're not allowed to interact with the people speaking. We don't have that rule here.
Okay.
What's your response to what Mr. Sparegrove was saying?
Well, and I may have, and you played the his comments in the very, very beginning he started out, you know, listening, and in fact, how what Lyle, if I understood correctly, he was referring to the June board meeting where we were talking, and I am always person to own up to if I do something, but many of the comments that he was referring to, you know, 20 years of failure, different things like that, I certainly was making those comments. And so I think that beginning part, he was listing some of the things, myself being a contributor, and then his follow-up was then listing year by year, you know, basically bringing some clarity and also the perspective of a person who was very deeply involved. And I appreciate when that kind of information is laid out and brought back, and it made me think, okay, I need to be more dialed in to when I'm upset about something or advocating against something. I need to do my homework as well, and that homework could have and would have should have included going to talk to Lyle. But all things, you know, moving on to what your question is, I come from a situation where I try to look at both sides. I like Cass and probably yourself. I grew up under traditional math; it was rote. I think I turned out okay. I understand that society has changed. There is a need, and I understand it, to put more realism in, you know, as we approach math, in such a way that students can understand the concepts, not just rote memory. However, and I do not have the level of education that people like Lyle do, but just as a parent, who we are a family that had a child who struggled in math as well as I did. So I saw firsthand the struggles. I think that the blended approach that is being looked at right now with Laura Rogers, she did a lot of outreach and provided opportunities for families to comment, and then, you know, had meetings with her math teachers. And I'm very optimistic for this. I think if there, it's I understand the need for integration, the integrated, but in my opinion, non-college educated, that if you can build that core foundation, I mean, if you can build that foundation with traditional numbers, and I also look at it for the parents that are trying to provide home support for their child. Maybe as time goes on and these children grow up and they have children, that concept will be something that they can sit down. I could not help either of our children after about sixth grade. I was completely out of the equation. So she's providing material that is, you know, right on a piece of paper, examples and things like that. And I feel strongly that we need to keep those options open. The children learn differently. If I had my ideal world and ideal budget for the Sitka School District, there would be a integrated track offered in math for those students that excel, and they thrive and they hunger for more. Let them go. Give them full rein. But for those students, and we have a lot of them that struggle, let them work the traditional route. Now, we don't have that option, but this blended option, I'm hoping, is going to work or be better. But I just know that has been, it's one of the reasons that I ran for school board. I know Cass was a similar situation, and it has been probably one of the number one phone calls that I get, and people talk to me on the street about that. And so taking a lot of time here on the question, but I feel like the district we are moving in the right direction, and I plan to be listening and soliciting feedback to see how it's going.
All right. Thank you, Eric Van Sice. Amy Morrison, obviously you weren't a part of the board decision back in June, but you are a parent in the district, and maybe you're nodding your head like you know you've seen this in your own home.
Right. I can only approach this from a parent standpoint, and as a parent of two girls in high school right now, one that just graduated, I am incredibly confused by the math program. I did not realize that there was a decision made to change the curriculum back in June. I wasn't aware of that till last night. However, I do know, having two girls that are both freshmen, they are in two different math classes. And so I guess I kind of figured out just from seeing their schedules that I believe, you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe one is on one path and one is on the other. I don't know if that's true, that there are two being taught right now. I don't know what's integrated, what's traditional. I just know one of them is in like a math 1, math 2, math 3, math 4 type of a program. The other one's in a, I think it's algebra, calculus type program. How they got picked to be in those respectively, I have absolutely no idea. This is one of those things I was referring to earlier about communication between the schools and the parents. Is I didn't know anything about this as a parent. And so it's very confusing to see what your kids are doing and why two of them are doing different things. So I like what Lyle said about show me the data. I'm a data person also, and I would like to see what data has been presented for both of these math tracks. I think the key going forward is really just picking one and sticking with it. I couldn't tell you which one I would choose at this point. I can also say, as a parent of someone who just graduated, is in college now, she does not have to take any math classes. She's already completed those and satisfied those for her college degree. So I can say the program as it was these last 4 years, definitely my child succeeded very well in that and thrived in that and was able to take AP classes and did very well with the program that she was given. But she does excel in math, so... I don't know the perspective of kids that struggle in math.
All right. Thank you, Amy Morrison. We're getting emails at news@kcaw.org. If you'd like to pose a question for school board candidates Amy Morrison, Cass Pook, or Eric Van Sice, this is the first of three election forums that you'll be hearing over Raven Radio. Our next one will be next Monday evening, 6 to 8 p.m., and we'll have assembly candidates and mayoral candidates on the air for 2 hours. And that forum will be live at Harrigan Centennial Hall in the main auditorium if you'd like to come on out and ask your questions there. Emily Kwong and I will co-host that evening, and we hope it's informative for you. But right now we're talking about school board, which is our other publicly elected body in Sitka, and very important for the overall health of the community. And I want to thank Joanna, who just sent in a question via email. I would like to ask what the candidates plan to do to reinstate a full-time librarian at Blatchley Middle School next year and in the future. Libraries are the core of learning how to access and evaluate information, how can we say we are serving the needs of our students while denying them access to their library full-time to enhance their middle school curriculum? How will this further their success at the high school level and beyond? Again, that question via email, news@kcaw.org, and that's from Joanna. Eric, you're up.
Okay.
The library at Blatchley is still there, but there's no librarian.
Yes, and thank you, Joanna, for the question. Those decisions, for those who aren't aware, the board, we turn in our budget in April. The city looks at it, approves it, and then later on, based on state, we as a board basically put out what we'd like to see happen. And ultimately, there are these situations. Last year was a case where, due to declining enrollment, we had lost a staff member. But the big one that and she's correctly identified was the Blatchley Middle School loss of a librarian. And it's something that, while I have not spoken to this in previous forums or even in the comments that you were soliciting, in the back of my mind is, as a board member, to get more information, based on, why that decision was made and ways to remedy it. I know that some people, unfortunately, there are people out there that view libraries as something, why need a library when you got a tablet or, what you can access online. And I love libraries. I think it's the center of learning. And to have that position vacant or not adequately staffed does bother me. And it's something, if I'm reelected, I would like to really, as a board, have us delve into. And maybe it means that some things that are nice to have but not required to have, we have to look at a shift in our staffing and our personnel. Maybe there's something that is an activity or something like that. There's a staff member. Could we shift make sure that the emphasis is that when we have, when we have staff reductions, making sure that our core subjects obviously need to be covered, but those entities that support those core subjects, they also have to be supported too. And that's where I view the library and the librarian is, they're that person, be it Carrie Sagel, Bo Hedrick, student comes in and, they have research project, whatever. They're basically, they're like a, they're a conductor. They're okay. Look over here. It's we need to fix that. I just leave it at that. It needs to be fixed.
All right. Thanks, Eric Van Cise. Amy Morrison, your thoughts on the library position at Blatchley Middle School. The librarian was reassigned to a grant-funded position, so there is no librarian at Blatchley.
Right.
And this question from Joanna is, what would you do as a board member to try and reinstate that position?
I think the first thing that I would do as a board member is talk to the staff at Blatchley and see what the actual impact was this year. Compare it to, in the past years when they've had a librarian, and see if there have been, I have an understanding that maybe there's other teachers that were going to try to fill in as much as needed, that the library would still be accessible to the students, but just not have that full-time librarian. But I would like to hear impact, the results, the impact from the decision from people that are at Blatchley, and see what the actual impact was, and really rely on them to provide the board with information as to whether it's something that they strongly feel like they need to get back, and that they're not providing a service to the kids that they were previously providing, or if they found other ways to work around that and still provide that service to them. And then if ultimately, I think if it was determined that that was a really key position that needs to be brought back, I would certainly look at that in the whole budget process to see if there's a way to do that. So,
all right. Thank you, Amy Morrison. Cass Puck, your thoughts on it. I do remember going to a board meeting at the end of last year, and Carrie Sagel, the librarian we're talking about, was talked quite emotionally about the library and the purpose that it serves that we might not be aware of, that it is kind of a refuge for kids who sometimes struggle socially at school. They tend to find a home in the library, and just listening to Amy, I sort of recollected that statement from Carrie Sagel. Anyway, your thoughts on reinstating the librarian at Blatchley?
You took the words out of my mouth. I was thinking the same thing about Carrie. I remember her at the meeting being emotional and teary-eyed and choked up over the thought of not having a librarian. Again, Carrie is very gifted. She's a special person that met the needs of a lot of the students in junior high. And I think of the trauma-informed, not that all kids experience trauma or had difficulties, but she met a lot of them where they were at. She was that adult in their life that if someone can say, can you name one person that made a difference in your life? I believe that Carrie's name would come up a lot because she was that adult in the school that was safe, that people can talk to. And so to have that gap, I would advocate. All we have to do as school board members is just add it to the list next year when the budget process comes up and say we want a librarian back. That's as simple as that, and we fight for it. I would be for doing that next year. but that's going to be a cost. That means we're going to have increased PTRs. The classroom size is going to be bigger. Maybe we're going to have to cut a program. Maybe we're going to have to cut someone in the administrative position. I don't know, but it's going to cost something to get something back if our funding remains the same. It hasn't gotten much better every year when we rely on funding from the legislature, when we rely on funding from local funding. A lot of the resources that we do have is because of collaboration with organizations, nonprofit, that come in and they help us keep what we have. So, and I would hope that we would find somebody of the caliber of Carrie that would meet the kids where they're at and do what she did. She did a lot. But we may not get that same person because they may not have the same passion or the same empathy. She was great. So I would advocate for it.
All right. Thank you, Cass Book. I should mention that I have asked the school board candidates, and we've also asked the assembly and mayoral candidates to fill out a brief survey and write us 200-word answers to a variety of questions, like their leadership style, in this case with the school board, school funding, infrastructure, and advocacy was one of them. And I wonder if people realize how much school board members sometimes have to lean in to advocacy, not just at the assembly table, but actually traveling to Juneau and meeting with legislators and things like that. And every one of these candidates has will supply an answer that you can read personally. And we may get to some of these questions tonight, too, but we'll have an election hub at kcaw.org where you will be able to sort of just run down and see where all the candidates stand on some of these sort of overarching questions that you may be wondering about their candidacy. But I think some of the issues which are coming from you, the listener, via email at news@kcaw.org, and some of the things that are just cropping up in conversation are kind of interesting. And you've mentioned trauma-informed education now a couple of times, Cass, and it came up at the school board last night, and I wanted to ask you guys a question about it because it does seem to be an issue that's gaining more traction because there was the whole school year started with an in-service from Linda Chamberlain, who came up and she did a community-wide presentation on trauma-informed care, and she also did an in-service for the schools, and at the board meeting last night, it was Dionne Brady, who talked a little bit about the importance of trauma-informed or generational trauma, and I wanted to play a little bit of what Dionne said last night, and she repeated it again in front of the State Board of Education at the lunch work session today. Here's Dionne Brady.
Even though our current education system and our current educators weren't responsible for that cultural genocide, the vehicles that we continue in as schools were the vehicles that were used for cultural destruction for so many years. And I guess my big interest is in trying to put something back.
And again, that was school board member Dionne Brady Howard talking about how historically schools have been involved in alienating Alaska Natives from their culture, and now there's this conscientious effort to make schools more culturally responsive in their social-emotional learning. And I wanted to get sort of a reaction from board members to this effort. I know that the school district is putting their backs into it a bit. Amy, have you been tracking this at all?
No, and I actually wasn't there for that part of the board meeting, so okay. I missed that. So I'm sorry, is the question more related to trauma or is it related to the cultural?
Yeah, I guess is the question is the school district being sensitive to the fact that culturally there are people in the community who culturally have seen schools as the source of the you know, decline in their languages. This is historically, of course, you know, some at boarding schools, Tlingit sometimes was discouraged physically. I mean, it's well known that there were attempts to sort of suppress culture in the education system in the early 20th century in Alaska. And now there's this shift that I think Dionne Brady Howard and others in the district administration are very much interested in sort of keeping that in mind as they reintegrate some cultural education into the schools. And I guess the question is, are you okay with that?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, without knowing a lot about it or what's being done right now, but absolutely, I think it's very critical. I think as someone who didn't grow up in Sitka but has now lived here most of my adult life, but have kids that are born and raised here, I think even my kids learning the cultural backgrounds of, you know, Sitka and Alaska and stuff is very critical to their education. So I would definitely say I would support that trend.
Okay. Thanks, Amy. And yeah. Apologies for not sort of crafting a very good question. Cass, the chairman of the State Board of Education looked at you at lunch today and said, in your 17 years, have you seen positive change in sort of, you know, in trauma-informed cultural education? Are things progressing?
I think they are progressing. Just that we have Pacific High School, a school that is for alternative school, shows that we as a community have a passion and a commitment to kids that don't fit into the traditional model. Is it where I'd like to be? No, because even as an adult, I feel that way still in the community. My mom always taught me to stand up tall, be confident, and I still do that as an adult. And so I think that's why that has come up in my conversation with the trauma informed, is because it's like, finally we're doing something. Finally there's something for social emotional learning, and there's brain studies that are coming out and that show the effects of adverse childhood experiences, epigenetics of how grief can be passed through memory, and it gives a little bit more understanding to what our kids are experiencing in school and how important it is to just say hi to them when you see them on the street, smile at them, give them positive affirmations. And so I'm very passionate about that and how we value our kids in this school. And so I think we have made progress, and I hope we continue to do that.
All right. Thank you, Cass Pook. Eric Van Cise, your thoughts on trauma-informed education and trauma-informed cultural education? I guess there are two. You mentioned adverse childhood experiences. There is trauma, and then there's this sort of generational and historical trauma that is related but kind of parallel.
Yeah, they're both critically important to focus on and address, because they intertwine. I can, you know, just for my one of my prior things I did was a volunteer EMT in the village of our community of Puna here in Sitka and rural Fairbanks, and over the 20 years of being a medical responder, it didn't matter. I mean, it didn't matter the ethnicity or the economic level of the homes and places that we rolled on. But I will never forget, you know, the amount of stuff that I saw as a medic, and there'd be homes with children. You know, didn't matter again what their ethnicity was, and I don't have like a PTSD response from those, but it still haunts me to think, my gosh, what these children were exposed to would weaken the strongest adult. And I think the awareness, both from the cultural aspect of how the impact has been for Native Alaskans across North America, I mean, the indigenous populations across North America, when you have something dramatically removed, and then suddenly there's just literally a stop in a culture and something that has been for thousands and thousands of years, and the fallout from that is long lasting, and I don't think a lot of people understand that. or realize the impact. I think in Sitka, with the proximity we have of our town and how we do reach out much, much more now with Sitka Tribe and all of our other outside resources, that awareness is becoming more and more. And it's not just something that people are talking about to check the box. There's serious efforts and work going on that I see when I stated my campaign, you know, statements that I think we're moving in the right direction. And we are moving in the right direction with this, but there's a lot of work to be done. And we cannot underestimate the impact that this has on not only a certain demographics of people, but it's, when you look at it at a broad scale, this kind of stuff goes on. Yes, it's heavier in some different demographics, but we see it at all economic spectrums and all ethnicities. And it's that it just drives home more that when we have those students and those children in our classroom or in our campus for 6 or 7 hours, that may be the only peace and sanity that child has. And we're very aware of that, and that's why we're so passionate at what we do.
Mm-hmm. Amy, did you have a follow-up?
Yeah. Focusing more on the trauma side of things. You know, I was actually just reading a study the other day, and I can't remember the exact statistic, but it was significantly high how many kids have dealt with mental issues and have mental, you know, trauma issues. One thing I would love to see is just, like Eric said, just continue to be aware of that and to have educate our teachers about the trauma and how to recognize that in the classroom, how to deal with that, because I think it's just in our society, it's becoming a lot bigger problem. And it made me think of last night at the board meeting, there was a parent that spoke about an issue that she had with a child and seeing a note, you know, in another child's mailbox at school of not only are these kids dealing with trauma from home or other, you know, parts of their lives, but then they bring that to school, and then you can get into safety issues at school too. And I would like to see teachers being educated as much as possible about how to recognize these signs and how to work with these kids, the administrators being educated, but also the parents. That's one thing that as a parent, I had a situation with one of my children a couple years ago where she was being, I don't know if you would say bullied or threatened or something by another child. And I, as a parent, didn't know how to deal with it. I didn't know if you call and if you, you know, let the administrators know, or if you're being like the tattletale parent, or, you know, so I would like to see more communication with the parents too, just of what to recognize and be talking to your kids and know what they're seeing, what they're going through, because it's, you know, as we see in the news, it's a big issue in our society right now.
Yeah. Thank you, Amy Morrison. Cass, did you want to throw in anything else on that question since we're going around again? We can. I have a new question too, if you want it.
I did. I would, and, but I forgot.
Okay.
While she was talking, I was thinking about my grandson. He's living in Everett now. My son-in-law's in the Coast Guard been 13 years, so he's now moved to Everett, and my 7-year-old grandson is doing meditation and mindfulness in school, and I know that's a new trend that's starting, and it's part of this trauma-informed, is helping them to know how to relax and center themselves, not in a strange way, but it's part of the healing of the mind with trauma, and I would like to see that in our school district, where kids can take time out, whether it's a couple days a week or every day, you know, for about 10 minutes before class starts, is just mindfulness to set the tone for the day so they have a good day. So that's what I wanted to say.
Yeah, Eric.
Well, just one thing that always, you know, pops in my mind after the fact, when I was talking, I think another important, really strong factor for making progress on this is making sure, because it is an optional staffing position, is our counselors. I know that came up a few years ago with the, I think it was Assembly, it was inquiring, well, I think the comment was, this is not a required position. Why do we need that? And there could, in my opinion, not be a more diligent time in not only SICA, but in our society, that along with making sure we have adequate teachers in the classroom, you know, the paras and support staff and principals, but we need, and I want to make sure, and if we're not there, I know we've had some issues in the past, that we need our counselors. We need counselors at every one of our schools, all five schools, and they are, what counselors I know at the district, and I've been at the schools, it is, they are amazing people, what they work with. It's just, and we're very fortunate for the counselors that we have, and I think that we need to just put those people and what they do right up there at the top of our priority, is making sure, checking with the principals, are we adequate? Do we have enough? And if we don't, we got to find a way to do it.
All right. Thank you, Eric Van Sice. We're down to our last 4 minutes of this program. Time flies. Isn't politics fun? Yeah. I guess we, I want to thank Kent for his question. I don't think we'll be able to get to it. I wanted to just give each of you a chance to kind of wrap up a little bit. I did, as I mentioned, we do have this survey that I sent around to you all, where we sort of asked the more traditional questions. But I think, and people will have a chance to read that, but as we sort of say goodbye tonight, I think this is a chance to just remind folks about, you know, why you remain invested in wanting to be do this candidacy and be on the school board and serve Sitka. So, Cass, do you have any sort of final comments for our audience?
Yes, I just want to thank those that have supported me over the years and have put your trust in me to advocate for the Sitka School District. And my number one passion is advocacy for students to feel valued in school, for them to be successful, and to... I've worked in behavioral health for the past 18 years, and so I think that's why the trauma-informed stands out to me, is I did work at Raven's Way for 6 years, and right now I work in health promotions for SEARCH, and I work under the Mass Suicide Prevention and Intervention Grant and travel to some of the small communities. And so I guess my eyes are just wide open to that, and so I make it a point to make kids feel important when I see them. I love working with youth, and just ask for your support to continue advocating.
All right. Thank you, Cass Pook. Mm-hmm. Eric Van Sice, some final thoughts for our listeners tonight.
Yeah, and a big thanks to the listeners and yourself for the work, and fellow board members for those running for the position. It's been a nice evening and good dialogue. I'm looking for support to be the school board member again for another 3 years. It's been a good journey. It's a learning process. I feel, you know, obviously, as one would expect or hope, more prepared, you know, for another go around. It's something that, as I spoke to earlier in the evening, I believe strongly in public schools. I believe Sitka is a gem of a place for education, not only from our community, our environment, and just our collaboration with so many entities. There's a reason why people stick it out here and have their children go through the schools here. I would like to just continue to be a part of that team. Our staff, you know, the teachers that are in the classroom, the paraprofessionals, the support staff, the principals, the admin, There is no perfect public school out there, but we are making honest efforts to do the best we can, and that's something that is important to me. To be, it gives me the drive and the ambition to do what I can. I work really hard to be honest, to look at the big picture, look at the ideal world versus a real world and see what we can do. I'm a very strong advocate for the programs that we have, the diversity of our programs in our district. I've always been and will continue to be a big, big champion for our trade skills and vocational education. I think there's enormous possibilities on that in those realms, just providing those opportunities for our kids. So anyway, I'm hopeful. We'll see how it goes. But in closing, what I would really encourage the listeners out there is to exercise the right to vote, be it whether it's for me or Amy or Cass. If I'm the, you know, we're dedicated, and read the biographs, get in there, not only about us, but the assembly, and vote with your heart. But the important thing is, whether you're voting for me or one of my co-candidates here, please exercise that right to vote.
All right.
Thank you.